Stay tuned for Nightline Africa, coming up right after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Frances Alonso reporting. An insurgent group fighting alongside Afghanistan's Taliban says it's ready to join political reconciliation talks with the Kabul government, despite being deeply skeptical about peace intentions of the other side. Afghan President Ashraf Ghani last week renewed his offer of negotiations to all insurgent groups in his bid to end the devastating war. But in a statement released to the media Sunday, the Hizb-e-Islami faction, led by an Afghan warlord, said it had accepted the government's offer and is prepared to participate in the talks to show the Afghan nation that it wants peace. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry Sunday accused Syria of clearly trying to disrupt the U.N.-sponsored peace talks aimed at ending the 5-year civil war in the country by demanding that there be no discussion of removing President Bashar al-Assad from power. The top U.S. diplomat said that violence in the country has been hugely reduced by 80% to 90% since the cessation of hostilities was declared 2 weeks ago. But he said the single biggest violator of the truce has been the Assad regime. French aviation investigators say the co-pilot of the Germanwings jetliner who crashed the plane into the French Alps last year had been referred to a psychiatric clinic 2 weeks before deliberately killing all 150 people on board. The findings by the investigating agency, the French authority responsible for safety accidents, were included in a report issued Sunday, more than a week before the first anniversary of the tragedy. You're listening to VOA News. Saudi-led forces attacked an al-Qaeda militant in Aden overnight in an effort to dislodge them from a stronghold in the southern Yemeni port city, killing at least 17 people in helicopter strikes, according to medics and a security official Sunday. On another front, the Saudi-backed forces supporting President Abd Rabbu Mansour Hadi fought to widen their control of ties in the southwest after breaking a siege on militants there Friday. The Islamic militants from al-Qaeda and the Islamic State have exploited the conflict to expand their control. German Chancellor Angela Merkel prepared for a backlash at the polls Sunday over her migrant policy as Germans voted in 3 regional elections. The anti-immigration right-wing Alternative for Germany party was expected to do well in the largest elections since the country opened its doors to more than 1 million migrants last year, with more than 12 million Germans eligible to vote in the so-called Super Sunday polls. The election is seen as a referendum on Merkel's leadership. North Korea is denying recent accusations made by South Korea that it launched cyber attacks on the smartphones of several South Korean government officials last month. An editorial in the North state-run Rondong Sinmun newspaper Sunday said claims made by the South's National Intelligence Service last week were fabrications aimed at rallying support for a controversial proposed new anti-terrorism law. The NIS said Pyongyang conducted the attacks on the smartphones of dozens of South Korean officials between late February and early March. Hundreds of thousands of Moroccans are demonstrating to protest the UN chief's remarks about the contested Western Sahara territory. Morocco considers the region as its southern provinces and took offense when UN chief Ban Ki-moon used the word occupation after a visit this month to refugee camps for the region's native groups in southern Algeria. Protesters Sunday filled the streets of Rabat after leading Moroccan political parties, unions, and non-governmental groups called for a national demonstration. Authorities claim there were up to 3 million. The world's reigning champion Go player has redeemed himself with his first win over Google's artificial intelligence program Sunday after 3 straight humiliating losses. The South Korean grandmaster Lee Sedol defeated AlphaGo Sunday in Seoul in the 4th game of the best-of-5 series involving the ancient Chinese game. I'm Frances Alonso in Washington.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
Good evening and welcome to Nightline Africa. We are coming to you live from the English service of the Voice of America. Thanks for joining us. I'm Peter Clote in Washington.
This worry that the church has regarding the forthcoming election, that we are witnessing some force of violence.
Zambian Catholic bishops plan to meet all political parties and their presidential candidates.
He actually ordered the governor of the bank to ensure that he cleans up the ghost workers that appears on the list of the central bank.
Tanzanian President John Magufuli orders the immediate removal of ghost names among workers of the Bank of Tanzania.
So all these people, families, women, children, have been hiding so long in the bush, eating nothing and drinking dirty water.
And Cameroon says its hospitals at the border with Nigeria are overwhelmed by severely wounded victims of the Boko Haram insurgency. Those stories and more coming up on Nightline Africa. Zambian Episcopal Conference plans to meet with all political parties and their presidential candidate in a move to help curb politically motivated violence before the August 11 general election. Incumbent President Edgar Lungu and main opposition leaders, including Hakainde Hichilema and Neves Mumba, have agreed to be part of the meeting with the Roman Catholic bishops. Father Winfield Kunda, Communications Director for the Catholic Media Services, told me the Catholic priests want to ensure the elections are not marred by violence.
This worry that the church has as regards the forthcoming elections, that we are witnessing some force of violence. And it's all about reconciliation, unity, so that the electorate and different political groupings may tolerate each other as we edge towards the elections. So it's really talking to the leaders so that the leaders can inculcate in their cadres the spirit of tolerance.
But why is tension so high ahead of the election? The election is on August 11.
There are political players who have just come in on board, and you have to know that we lost the president last year. So probably the ruling government or the ruling party is afraid of losing maybe the office. But at the same time, we have the major opposition party, which has been in opposition for a long time, and they also want to take this chance to win, and they are also afraid that they may lose out. So there is a bit of tension within the nation.
Have all these political leaders and their presidential candidates, even those parties that do not have representation in parliament, have they agreed unanimously to be part of this anticipated meeting that you will be organizing?
Usually when the church, being the moral voice, calls for this, almost everyone comes on board. Yesterday, we had the Episcopal consecration of a new bishop. I would say three major political party leaders were present at the ceremony, and they heard and they are ready to come on board. Usually, whenever the church calls for this, they do come, because in Zambia, still, the church commands the moral voice.
Well, some people have expressed concern that pronouncements of these leaders are taken by their supporters as very heated, and that leads to the tension, which leads to some isolated incidents of violence or pockets of violence that people have said about it. What has the church said about some of these pronouncements by these political leaders?
The bishops in January produced the pastoral statement in which they strongly urge all the political leaders to tone down and to try as much as they can to discipline their political cadres, members, in a way that it should start from them, not just to announce, not just to talk the walk, but to walk the talk, as it were.
Well, I understand President Lungu has officially accepted the invitation to be part of this meeting. When will this meeting be organized?
We haven't sat down with the bishops and to really come up with the date or what, because we have just, this was just announced during the celebration. Now we have to go back and sit as the office and to look for the date, the exact date, which when we can organize that. And probably that should be done before August.
You are aware that the security agencies, particularly the police, have been accused of being biased in certain instances where opposition parties are concerned. Will they be part of this meeting, or it's not for them? This is strictly for political parties.
It's strictly political parties. That goes now to the issue of Public Order Act. When it comes to the issue of Public Order Act, it's how the police exercise their authority. And there's been again by the bishops to insist that if the police should be above board, that they do not tolerate all this kind of nonsense, supporting maybe those who are in leadership. And when it comes to those who are in opposition, then you don't give them the chance that they need or the security they need whenever they hold any gathering or grouping.
What should Zambians expect to curb violence ahead of the election? What should they expect from this meeting?
Majority of Zambians are Christians. Majority are Christians, are practicing Christians. And once it comes from the leaders of the church, especially the bishops, and we have a network of through which we can filter the message, you know, to the lowest level in all areas in Zambia, that will be the message now that will ask all the priests, the pastors and the leaders to inculcate, to preach to all these people before they go out now to go and campaign. And we are hoping that at the end of that, we are not going to experience any violence prior to elections.
Father Winfield Kunda is the communications director for the Catholic Media Services. He spoke with me from the capital, Lusaka. Tanzanian President John Magufuli has ordered the head of the Bank of Tanzania to weed out ghost names of workers after demanding an audit of the 1,391 workforce and terminate those the bank deems redundant. The president's remarks came after he paid a surprise working visit to the headquarters of the bank in the commercial capital Dar es Salaam. Asa Mwambini, the Tanzanian government spokesman, told me President Magufuli is serious and committed to his promise to weed out corruption.
The president sounds to have heard quite a lot of information about, actually, the visit he made was in the Central Bank of Tanzania. And so he had a list of workers, and he had a knowledge that there are list of workers who appears on the list of the Central Bank and who happened not to be working within the bank. So he actually ordered the governor of the bank to ensure that he cleans up the ghost workers that appears on the list of the Central Bank. When the governor had wanted to kind of react, the president came very angrily and said he knows everything and all the governor has to do is to take precaution and make sure that he implements, you know, what he says, because he knows for sure that there are ghost workers within the Central Bank.
Has the bank begun the process of weeding out the supposed ghost names that the president talked about?
The good thing is the president did not give them the ultimatum. And all he said, you have to do it. And for sure, there is no option for the Central Bank governor. He would certainly have to do it. And I can assure you that immediately after the president made the statement, you had a lot of a list of people considered to be working there, but whose connection, people who went to work there, who happened to be the sons and daughters of some of the top government officials. You know, so people are making fun of all these lists. But the fact is that there is certainly a number of workers that the president, as the president lightly said, who sounds not to be working at the Central Bank, but they still get the salaries. So that's for sure that there's no way he could not do it, because otherwise he will risk quite a lot.
But what about the issue of stop payment of government contract from the Bank of Tanzania?
Yeah. This was the payment that was due to be paid by the Ministry of Finance to most of the contracts that were due to be paid. And the president said he needed to do some proper scrutiny about these payments because he suspects that there might be some of the money paid to the wrong companies or wrong contracts. And so he wants to have the report in his hand that spells out in clearly. Who is supposed to get the cut, or who is supposed to be paid, and clearly to be sure that every government money that goes to the contractors really goes to the very contractors rather than going to the ghost contractors.
Has this move that the president has been taking been yielding fruit? Because some opposition people are saying that sometimes his moves are just for the cameras, are just for show, and that they need to see concrete action. Are these moves being welcomed by Tanzanians, and how effective has it been since he started them?
You need to come to the National Hospital where, a number of rooms were barely without beds, enough beds, and you had a lot of patients being compacted in one location, sometimes without a bed, or sharing three people on the bed. And you need to come now and see all these. You need to see the offices that are being turned into the ward for the women who are coming, pregnant women. And these are very real issues that, it's not faking as the opposition might be want to put it. And so it is making a lot of impact in Tanzania in the sense that you are now seeing more roads, more feeder roads being constructed right from the money that comes from the, road fund. And initially, this money was not coming out. And so now we are seeing 100% of the money that was, earmarked for the road fund to cut from the feeder roads in most of the rural areas. Now they are being either tarmacked or being repaired. And we are also seeing 100% repayment of the money that was destined to the judiciary. So the judiciary is getting almost 100% of the cut of the budget that was supposed to be. Initially, this was not possible. Sometimes they could get even just about half or 40% of the money that was allocated in the budget. So now we are seeing it. The budget goes to the right people, and it is the money that is being spent, not the budget, but without disbursement of the money.
Asa Mwambene is the Tanzanian government spokesman. He spoke with me from Dar es Salaam. Cameroon says its hospital on the northern border with Nigeria are overwhelmed by severely wounded victims of the Boko Haram insurgency. The area suffers acute shortages of hospital staff, medical equipment and infrastructure. For VOA, Moki Edwin Kenzeka reports from Mora, northern Cameroon.
16-year-old Gwendolyn Amike has been given pain-relieving drugs at the Cameroonian District Hospital of Mora, some 20 kilometers from the border with Nigeria. She says she was rushed to the hospital by the Cameroon and Nigerian military after they organized raids against Boko Haram fighters in her Nigerian town of Goshe in February.
We're in school when we heard shooting from all angles, even planes flying were shooting, and we're so confused. I don't even know how I found myself here.
Regional forces from Cameroon, Nigeria, Chad, Niger, and Benin have been launching raids on Boko Haram strongholds along the border since last December. The raids, suicide bombings, and landmines planted by the insurgents have increased the number of victims. Hannah Lechandre, a French-born volunteer with the Cameroon Medical Council, says the Mora District Hospital, with a capacity of 50 beds, now hosts 350 victims from Cameroon and Nigeria.
Actually, their health status and their mental status is very worrying. So all these people, families, women, children, have been hiding so long in the bush, eating nothing and drinking dirty water. So they arrive in Cameroon in very, very bad situation in terms of health.
Cameroon's health minister, Andre Mamafuda, says five hospitals on the border with Nigeria are overcrowded with more than 1,700 victims being taken care of by only about 400 staff members. The hospital's capacity is barely 350. He says they lack equipment and infrastructure to cope with the growing numbers, and the hospitals are running short of supplies despite international efforts to assist.
Je suis venu ici pour apporter le réconfort et les encouragements.
He says he has come to comfort and encourage both victims of war and medical staff, helping them, and to assure them the president and government of Cameroon are aware of their difficulties and they are working towards resolving them. Cameroon says more than 1,500 victims of Boko Haram atrocities died in hospitals on its northern border with Nigeria between January 2015 and March of this year. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Mora, Northern Cameroon.
Local media advocacy groups say South Sudanese journalists are being threatened or attacked. The Association of Media Development and the Union of Journalists say 12 cases were reported in just 3 months. This dangerous trend, they say, is having a chilling effect on the ability of journalists to do their jobs. For VOA, Philip Thornaleo has the story from the South Sudanese capital, Juba.
The two groups say between late December and March of this year, more than a dozen journalists have been intimidated, detained, kidnapped, shot or tortured. The incidents include an attack by five gunmen on a reporter of the UN's Radio Mirai and the shooting of a South Sudan radio technician in Wau, according to a joint statement by the two groups. Oliver Modi is chairman of the Union of Journalists of South Sudan.
This is a very big threat to us. And actually, we are asking the government, we are asking individuals, we are asking the people of the Republic of South Sudan to stop this kind of act against journalists.
Modi says attacks on the media violates basic freedoms of citizens provided by the South Sudan Constitution. Alfred Taban, head of the Association of Media Development in South Sudan, says the government has a duty to arrest the gunmen who are attacking journalists.
We can say there are certain people who are really brutalizing journalists in South Sudan. We still don't know whether they are government agents or some freelance people, we don't know. Well, according to the constitution, the government should be able to protect all its citizens.
Modi agrees.
We need to make sure that journalists work in a free and fair environment. But there are individuals in the Republic of South Sudan, let me say on the government side. And when I talk of government, including all the government sectors, be it security or whatever, we found that our brothers from the security sector are actually a threat to us.
Taban says the ongoing harassment will have long-term consequences on South Sudan's journalists.
Because if it continues like this, I don't think you will have a journalist working in this country because they will all fear for their lives. And this is very unfortunate.
Taban says the government must keep the rule of law and authorities must arrest suspected criminals. Several attempts to reach Information Minister Michael Makwe by phone for comment on this story were unsuccessful. In the first, the government has repeatedly denied it has attacked or harassed journalists. Officials have in the first promised to investigate any incidents involving journalists, though no reports of such investigations have ever been made public. For VOA News, I am Philip Thornaleo in Juba.
Former Zimbabwe Broadcasting Corporation staffer Sifo Dube has ventured into a courier business in Auckland, New Zealand. Dube's company called Kalima Investments plays a critical role in moving and receiving mail and other accessories. He tells viewers Gibbs Dube business, like his courier service, are a lifeline for Zimbabweans who have dual citizenship in New Zealand.
Well, in Auckland, like all other concerned Zimbabweans, what we've done or what I've done personally as an individual is more of enhancing myself academically. There is so many New Zealanders and so many Zimbabweans to say we've got dual citizenship. We've come from Zimbabwe and the whole of Africa at large that have settled in this country, New Zealand. I am also one of those. And in pursuit of a brighter future and perhaps investment back in Zimbabwe, what we've done is enhancing ourselves as individuals academically. So I also enhance myself academically in the studies of communication and journalism.
Now, tell us a bit about what you are doing, you know, in terms of business.
Like I said earlier on, the arena overseas is about investment. And I also went into that very same kind of area and sphere of investment after having done a master's in business administration at one of the universities in Auckland. And I decided to pick on communications in its widest perspective. So there is Australian companies that send items to New Zealand, and there is American companies and individuals that are sending items to New Zealand. So what I did is I opened a company that deals with accepting all those items or the selected contracts, and we redistribute them or deliver them around Auckland.
How viable is that company?
New Zealand as a developing country is a consumeristic environment or a consumeristic country, meaning there is very little production done here. The main trend in terms of business dealings is just consumption. So you'll find most business is mainly about just consumption as in stuff that has been manufactured away from New Zealand, just being brought into the country for distribution purposes. You find automobiles, for instance, as a distribution within the country is one of the biggest investments. The same kind of communication that I'm talking about is very big business. And also, again, in the communications sector, we've got a very huge number of Zimbabweans, mainly young guys, who used to work for companies like the PTC, as in the telecommunications back home. They're all here digging trenches and stuff like that for the fiber optic. All that is still communications. And those are the major kind of businesses. The other type of business that is very, very viable in New Zealand is construction. The population of the country is below 5 million at the present moment. And construction in terms of building houses and stuff like that, you'll find mostly it's all about people from Africa, trades people from Africa coming to sort of like put New Zealand on the world map.
Now, finally, do you have any message for Zimbabweans?
Well, Zimbabwe is home. And like they say, home is best. We are in New Zealand, or perhaps we are in the diaspora, including those that are in Australia, those that are in the UK, those that are in wherever, including the USA. We are also concerned about the deteriorating state of the economy. Therefore, I'm also one of those who is seriously concerned about that. And the main activities that we are all involved in as young Zimbabweans or old Zimbabweans in the diaspora is investment back home and also assisting our grandparents and relatives and also the whole community at large in terms of putting food on the table.
Sifo Dube is a former Zimbabwe Broadcasting Corporation staffer. He spoke with viewers Gibbs Dube from Auckland, New Zealand.
Next on Let's Talk. Lost love. Do you still remember your first love? Join host Sunday Shomari and his guests discussing lost love. This light-hearted show covers topics of your interest. Let's Talk comes to you Mondays at 17:30 UTC right here on VOA Africa.
This is the Voice of America, and you are listening to Nightline Africa. I'm your host, Peter Clotter, in Washington. Coming up in the second half of Nightline Africa, sports with Douglas Impuga and music from our African collection. And that will be followed by a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. And it's now time for Nightline Africa Sports. And for that, let's join Douglas Impuga. Good evening, Douglas.
Hello, Peter, and good evening, sports fans. Welcome to Nightline Africa Sports. In athletics, world 400-meter champion Wyde van Niekerk has become the first man in history to run faster than 10 seconds for 100 meters, 20 seconds for 200 meters, and 44 seconds for 400 meters after smashing his personal best in the shorter sprint at the Free State Championships in Bloemfontein on Saturday. The 23-year-old hasn't competed in a 100-meter race since his junior days, so his previous personal best of 10.45, also set in Bloemfontein back in 2011, was due for serious revision. But he surprised almost everyone, himself included, with his performance on Saturday. After clocking a personal best of 10.12 in the heat, van Niekerk won the final in 9.98. He's the second South African sprinter this week to break the 10-second barrier for 100 meters. Compatriot Akani Simbine set a national record of 9.96 in Pretoria on Tuesday. Van Niekerk set lifetime bests at all other sprint distances last year. He set a South African 200-meter record of 19.94 in Lausanne, broke the African 300-meter record with 31.63 in Birmingham, and then was fourth on the world all-time list over 400 meters with his memorable 43.48 victory at the IAAF World Championships Beijing 2015. Meanwhile, Bahrain's Eunice Kirwa successfully defended her Nagoya Women's Marathon title on Sunday with 2:22.40. the third fastest time in the history of the IAAF Gold Label Road Race. Also, there was a fierce battle to be the top Japanese finisher in what was the final opportunity to impress the selectors for the Olympic team, with the winner only prevailing in the final few meters. Japan's 2004 Olympic champion, Mizuki Noguchi, in a final bid to make another Olympic marathon team, started to drift off the rear of the lead pack just after 5 kilometers. The 37-year-old would eventually finish 23rd in 2:33.54 in what was her first marathon since 2013. In football, Egyptian giants Al Ahly were held to a 0-0 draw away to Recreativo Libolo in Angola on Saturday as Ahly's new coach Martin Joel launched his African Champions League career in the first leg of their last 32 clash. Ahly are hunting a record-extending 9th Champions League title under the guidance of the 60-year-old former Tottenham Hotspur and Fulham boss. The return match is set for Alexandria next Saturday, with record 8-time winners Ahly favourites to reach the final qualifying round for the group stage. Elsewhere, goals just before and after halftime gave Mamelodi Sundowns of South Africa a 2-0 home victory over AC Leopards of Congo Brazzaville. The other South African challengers, Kaizer Chiefs, suffered a shock 1-0 home loss to ASEC Mimosas of Ivory Coast at Soccer City Stadium in Soweto. ZESCO United of Zambia were impressive 4-1 home winners over Haroya of Guinea in Indola, thanks to goals from Idris Mbombo, Jesse Were, Cletus Chota, and Maibin Mwaba. Young Africans of Tanzania look set to secure the last 16 slot after winning 2-1 away to APR of Rwanda in an East African derby. Stade Malien of Mali overcame Cotton Sport of Cameroon 2-0 in Bamako, and there was a 1-0 home win for Club Africain of Tunisia over Malodia Bejaï. On Sunday, Zamalek's new coach Alex McLeish takes his team to Cameroon for a showdown against Union Douala. Elsewhere on Sunday, TP Mazembe of DR Congo start their title defense at St. George of Ethiopia under new French coach Hubert Velud. Finally, in boxing, former world champion Floyd Mayweather has added Ugandan boxer Sharif the Lion Bogere to his Mayweather promotions. The former Ugandan boxing national team captain inked a deal with the promotion company on Thursday. Mayweather told the media, in his words, We are proud to add another young, hungry fighter to our Mayweather promotions table, and he described Sharif Bogere as a very talented young man with an incredible backstory. On his part, Bogere said the move is an important one, his career, and that he's eager to get back in the ring and show everybody why he's a future champion.
Oh, it's a big opportunity, and I'm so excited. I'm thankful to God to be joining one of the greatest promotions in boxing right now. You know, people have been saying the lion, but this time the lion is going to come with a lot of fireworks. I just can't wait to get in there under the banner of the money team. The lion is coming stronger than ever, baby. We're going to be putting on great shows. The lion come and put it all to the ring. You know, I leave everything in the ring, you know. And when I come there, I come to destroy people. I don't go there to play.
Bogere is one of Uganda's greatest exports in the sport, and his record stands at 28 fights, 27 wins, including 19 knockouts, and has just lost once. The 27-year-old trains in Las Vegas with legendary trainer Kenny Adams. He turned pro in 2008. And that's it for this edition of Nightline Africa Sports. Now back to you, Peter.
Thanks a lot, Douglas. It's always a pleasure to hear from you. We'll link up with you again next Sunday for another look at African Sports Nightline Africa Sports. It's Sunday on Nightline Africa, and this is the time we get to relax and reflect, a flashback with music from the continent. Enjoy.
Hello, apo vipi siju unanisikia. Hello, na maneno natamani kukwambia. Hello, tafadhali usije nikatia. Hello, wana mpaka nasahau kusalimia. Habari gani?
Can't tell me nothing, stole my heart. I press God that he made you. See nobody, nobody replace you. So tell me how you seen her. African queen, number one diva. Shake your pretty bum ting when I pump speaker. Don't you know we run things in a Tanzania? Oh, da 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 da. Da 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 da. Da 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 da.
Oh mama, you gon' make me sing on a naimba. Give me thanks and praise. Feeling your embrace. You're my everything. One and only queen. Hey, 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 hey. Oh, oh, oh. Anytime you make me gaze. When I'm looking to your eyes. For I am good na yona. Pressure na nini ni mice. Napogwana pona
ni wewe
anani changanya
ni wewe
asiko chanya
ni wewe
anani changanya
ni wewe
chipe yangu mama
ni wewe
ifo ivo ivo chunga tusijetengane ifo ivo taratibu tutafika mama na ngoma yako isakati na koma dance ukikata sangoma wanini shanasa. I swear you did make me sing. Singing every day. Give me thanks and praise. Feeling your embrace. You're my everything. One and only queen. Hey, 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 hey. Oh, oh, oh. Anytime you make me gaze.
We fresh and clean. You want something, then chop my money up. Ah, yeah. No long team, I invite you to my bedroom party, yo. Take a shot and pop the bubbly. Glasses up, you got the loving. Break it down, we then make yell them sweat like cardio. Ah, you the queen of my kingdom. Number one in a million. About time I put a ring on. Bad girls got their eyes on my income. No stress or drama. Job bless us and dishonor.
Oh man, you did make me see.
Chozi, hakuna mwamba Mola unitoke moyoni. Ila nusiwezi, nakesha kamizi. Mana tanki lala unanijia notoni. Asante kwa kunyumiza, umejifunza mengi. Mwanzo sikuyajua, na hapa kutolipiza. Ila mwambie mapenzi, abaki kuyasikia. Kumbuka maneno yako, utonikimbia, utabaki na mimi. Tena ukala na viapo, taulati Biblia. Leo sikuoni, ila mwenzako bado. Maumivu yangu
heshima.
Ai wewe,
ibe,
utanizika mangi,
ibe,
mwenzi utabani,
ibe, choku chansi jesi ma.
Masikini pendo la,
ibe,
linandondoka, niokote mama,
choku chansi jesi ma.
That was our Sunday music spot. Hope you enjoyed the music from Nightline Africa here at the English service of the Voice of America. Now let's take a closer look at Africa, the problems, the prospect in time of conflict, in time of peace. Here's one man's point of view with Dr. James Jonah, former UN Under Secretary General for Political Affairs. Good evening, Dr. Jonah.
Good evening, Africa. Before, during, and after the Second World War, 1939 to 1945, many Africans looked to the United States as the beacon of liberation, opportunity, and freedom. In fact, many of Africa's independence leaders studied in the United States and went back to Africa to create independent nations. So there has been a long attachment between Africa and the United States. It is therefore not surprising that Africa, like the rest of the world, is quite baffled by political discourse currently taking place in the United States. Now, many are trying to figure out this phenomenon of Trumpism. On the part of the Republicans, they have argued that the 7 years of Obama administration has produced the phenomenon that we call Trumpism. But last week, President Obama gave a very cogent analysis to debunk this narrative. His conclusion was that Trumpism could be related to the way the Republicans have performed in the legislature during his administration. Yet another Democrat has come forward with an analysis stating that Trumpism could be related to the Democratic administration of the 90s. He argued that the Democrats had abandoned the white working class, and that may account for the support of Mr. Trump. But when you read the book, there are so many holes in this book that it is not worthy to be pursued. One can also find more cogent reasons to explain what is transpiring today in the U.S. political scene. Over decades of 24-hour cable television networks have produced a phenomenon where large numbers of Americans are no longer able to do deep analysis of political events. They are more now accustomed to sound bites and complete simplicity of political phenomenon. Therefore, you hear today that for you to have economic liberation, your best bet is to break up Wall Street. If you want to end illegal immigration, your best bet is to build a wall. These are all simplified ideas which in the end mean very little. But the real reason for the cable television network over a generation is that a large number of Americans have very strong political opinions but lack the knowledge to back their political opinion. And any political leader who wants to manipulate can do so in such circumstances. And then we move also, Americans have the tendency to deny the role of race in the American political culture. There is a constant denial. But just take a look at how American political alignments have developed. When President Lincoln liberated the slaves, the Republican Party became a favorite in the South among the black population. And those whites who were dissatisfied with his action rushed to the Democratic Party in the South. This situation prevailed until the assassination of President Kennedy in November 1963 and the emergence of Lyndon Johnson as the president. He promoted civil rights legislation and voting rights for the black. And he told his colleagues that his action will result of the loss of the South by the Democrats. In fact, it happened that way. Nixon played the Southern card, and the Republicans soon became the dominant party in the South. The whites embraced it because they felt the Democrats have embraced the black population too much. That's what we have today. Obama, when he came in to run for presidency, realized the division in the country and came out with a new idea, a new coalition of African Americans, young whites, Latinos, Asians, and he was able to win. He won with 9 million votes surplus in 2008. And even though the Republicans tried to prevent him from having a second term, he won by 5 million in 2012. This created an enormous frustration on the part of those whites who were looking for the return of the Republicans. I dare say that this phenomenon is now being played. The anger that people talk about is because of the frustration to see how best they can defeat the Obama coalition. But America is now on the brink. And what is required are cooler heads to bring back America to the path of unity, path of leadership, so that America can play its useful role as the leader of the free world. I thank you.
That was One Man's Point of View, a commentary by Dr. James Jonah, former UN Undersecretary General for Political Affairs. Nightline Africa comes to you from the English service of the Voice of America. Hope you enjoy the program tonight. As you know by now, we are on air on Saturdays and Sundays at 16 and 18 hours UTC. I'm from the Nightline Africa team, managing editor Shaka Sale, reporter Douglas Impuga, producer Odette Frazier, and engineer for today, Tiang Wang. We say thanks for joining us. And remember, as the elders say, we will water the thorn for the sake of the rose. I'm your host, Peter Clotte, in Washington. Good evening, Africa.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. United States Ambassador to Cameroon, Michael Hoza, underscored the importance of transparency and strong institutions as he joined 20 ministers of the government of the Republic of Cameroon this month at an anti-corruption forum in Yaoundé. On March 2nd, the minister in charge of the Supreme State Audit Office, Ms. Emba Acha Fomundum Rose, opened the Pan-African Conference on the Prevention of and Fight Against Fraud and the Misappropriation of Public Funds, where she called for the elimination of corruption and the promotion of good governance and transparency. In his remarks, Ambassador Hoza said, "Preventing and fighting fraud and the misappropriation of public funds is vital for the development of Cameroon." The United States has learned its own lessons on this subject throughout our history, and we learned that building strong institutions was essential to combat corruption. We are still learning. Ambassador Hoza further noted that this is not a struggle that is alien to America. That is why we believe it is essential to share lessons learned. Corruption steals directly from the pockets of citizens, be they American or Cameroonian, or from anywhere else in the world for that matter. To truly make a nation's economy flourish and for its potential to be unleashed, said Ambassador Hoza, corruption must be reduced and eliminated. Otherwise, corruption is one of the key guarantees that the cycle of poverty continues for nations. The ambassador also observed, "Make no mistake, the public is always watching and judging public officials. Perceptions can equal realities to them, and therefore public opinion and freedom of the press matter, and it matters a lot for all democracies." The United States has been partnering with Cameroon in anti-corruption efforts for the past 10 years, sharing experience and strengthening partnerships with key institutions and citizens. Over the past 3 years, U.S.-Cameroon cooperation against the misappropriation of public funds has increased through collaboration with the Ministries of Public Contracts, Finance, and Justice, and also with specialized agencies such as the Public Contracts Regulatory Agency and the National Agency for Financial Investigation. The United States is proud to stand with its partner Cameroon and other African nations to help those nations guarantee the integrity and transparency that good government demands.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.